Mike, and the Hot.
And we're back. Welcome once again to another episode of Mike, Mike, and Oscar. I am your co-host, Mike One. Co-host also, Mike, is here. An Oscar race checkpoint for your ear holes coming for you now, dear listener. And this is, I mean, we've talked about smorgasbords before. This is a smorgasbord.
This is definitely a smorgasbord. We got some, but look, we do got some Oscar news right off the hop here. Mm-hmm. We got some Oscar trailers that I think will come through on. We got some awards news. We got some movies that I think should be up for awards of some kind, at least the scaries, because it was a great week in horror movies. But basically, we got an episode where I'm stalling. I did not have the time to do the research on the year in preview, Oscars year in preview episodes that we're going to do, the series we're about to start. I messaged you. I was like, kind of need another ORC that we could just, yeah, you know, but a lot of stuff did happen. So we do got stuff to talk about.
It's a gumbo of movie and awards news and information and previews that we're fixing up for you today. I was going to keep going with that cook analogy, but I realize my vernacular is severely lacking in that way.
It's a stew. Yeah.
Yeah. In memory of Carl Weathers, baby, you got a stew going there. Yeah.
It's like a Thursday night stew. You know, it's... It's fine. It's a fine
coming
episode
to you on a Wednesday morning, most likely. So, right on time as always here at MMO. Let's start with that award show news to lead off, Michael.
Yeah, I'm glad I have the days of the week straight. We have the Oscars live viewership tally that is now up to 21 million after delayed multi-platform viewing numbers came in. So here's the quote from Deadline. In the week since the 96th annual ceremony, ABC has tallied another 1.5 million or so viewers, bringing the grand total up to 21.01 million, up 5% from last year. This marks the largest multi-platform audience for the Oscars since the 2020 broadcast, which happened right before COVID-19 pandemic. In terms of the 18 to 49 demo, the show scored a 4.35 rating in MP, whatever that means, plus 7. This data includes viewing on streaming as well, which really is just like the Hulu Live. Like if you cut your cord to pay the same amount of money, right, to Hulu Live or I guess YouTube Live right, or whatever.
Right. Yeah. This was talked about in glowing terms. I don't know. I mean, the 2020 show, which was that early February's Oscar that happened right before the world did shut down, that still was about 10% higher than this final number anyway. I don't know that a 5% leap over last year is like something to go gaga over. I think they would have liked it to be significantly... I think the expectation was that it would be somewhat significantly higher, but I don't know. It was still talked about like it was a success, but this... there's still the glaring problems and issues that we talked about with like Clayton and Scott on here.
As somebody who's been trying to diet for a very long time, but who still just grows by like 5% every year. Mm-hmm. I predicted this. I predicted this was exactly going to happen. You asked me like point blank, one of those episodes. And I was like, yeah, it's going to go up a little bit, but you're like Oppenheimer, Barbie. And I'm like, we know who's going to win and everybody cut the cord and I don't know. I just felt it. I felt it. I'm still overweight. You know, I think, it's better that it went up 1.5 than going down, I guess. And it's better that it went up 5% overall than went down. But I think your sentiment is right on. I mean, it's kind of a bummer at the end of the day because you did have big movies.
Yeah, I don't, I mean, next year's show is not, it's going to be bad.
Oh, we're bracing for impact, aren't we? I mean, unless this is Dune 2 and right, all the Javier Bardem memes going against Joker Folie à Deux and all of the Lady Gaga memes that I hope are coming. Yeah. Unless it's that, unless we got two big movies vying for it legitimately, yeah. oh no.
Yeah.
We're in yeah. trouble, or I don't know. We got to wait.
That should be the tagline, maybe. Oscars 2025. Oh no.
Yeah, it's something I'm worried for, because I fear, and maybe we're reverse jinxing it, but I do fear that we're bracing for some comeuppance.
Our year in preview series will shed some light on that.
I think so. But here's the thing: like, if some of these movies hit and we got an eclectic bunch of Oscar potentials. Right
yeah,
now?
There's a chance. I mean, there's hope. We're not like saying it's a death knell right now. There's it could always surprise, but the expectations, I don't think, are all that high.
Yeah, I don't.
You're not getting Oppenheimer and Barbie.
I don't see another Barbenheimer unless the Garfield movie can really pick up some steam. Well, what was that demo that I referenced earlier? The MP's plus seven, whatever that means.
Yeah, exactly.
The mild Protestant plus 7 years. What is it? I have no idea. Just have. I'm glad I'm not in charge of television.
You just have immaculate on the brain. That's where the mild Protestant came from.
I do. I can't wait to review that movie. I need you to see it soon, by the way. But all right. So that's like, for whatever reason, that's a positive Oscar story that we took a negative slant on. And here is a Golden Globe story that we're going to take a positive slant on, because the Golden Globes inked a 5-year deal with CBS. Obviously, they've been through the ringer. They've somehow come out the other side, this organization that sold itself to itself. And basically wound up with Dick Clark Productions, which is, of course, a major award show producer throughout the years. And this deal to keep the Golden Globes on CBS also includes the American Music Awards broadcast, which will stay there. So what do we think of this, Michael? I think it's a win for the Globes. I mean, holy
yeah.
cow.
Yeah, certainly a win for the Globes, probably a win for CBS's ratings too. And, you know, Paramount Plus is still there. It's still attached to CBS. And maybe with this new deal, CBS can be the first broadcast network with an in-house streamer to actually take advantage of it and maybe offer some kind of dual viewership or dual viewing opportunity for the first major awards show. And maybe they can lay out a blueprint, or, you know, be a canary in the coal mine for what ABC can do with the Oscars, with incorporating Disney Plus, like we've been begging them to do for the last 2 or 3 years here now. I think this is a win overall. It's certainly a win for the Globes. There's no doubting that. Like you said, to think Paramount Plus is going to be involved, but also this
is
all contingent on the point that maybe Paramount in total could be sold to Zaslav any minute too, who will then be in control of the Golden Globes, which wouldn't be great.
Right. That's not great. But all right. Do you believe the Discussing Film and Film Updates X Twitter accounts? Do you believe them? Because sometimes.
Could you give me a little more here? What do you mean?
Well, they said that Paramount Plus is going to be involved. That's where I got that news from. So Paramount Plus is going to be involved. It's going to be a simulcast. From what I read on Twitter. Now, how much do we trust Twitter, and ergo, you know, moreover, how much do we trust accounts like those that are kind of aggregator accounts, you know, massive versions
right.
of aggregator accounts?
Right. Yeah, that's a good question. Although I don't even know, like, would you want a dual broadcast, or would you want the
yeah.
streaming component to enhance or try to draw people to your show?
You could do both. I don't think it's that hard to do both. I mean, you just put the
like, if it was me, I would just do what Monday Night Football does with the Manning cast. I'd like have my streamer be popular, maybe TikTok celebs or influencers or something, like younger skewing
sure.
celebrities, and have like an alternate view, a simulcast of the show.
Love it. But it doesn't cost you really anything to put the regular broadcast up
right.
on there too. So
right.
Just
That's true.
Do it. Just yeah. do it, CBS. Can you imagine if CBS sets the next wave of young
no shot
awards show
as
fans?
Soon as you said young and CBS, I'm out. No, that's not what CBS has ever done.
Nobody else is doing it. Here, CBS is going to do it. They're going to try it first.
The median age of the CBS viewer, I think, and I know this is not BS. Like, this is something I remember from years ago. Like, it was like in the 50s.
Yeah, but this is why they got nothing to lose, man.
I guess.
They got nothing to lose with Paramount Plus. They're
that
all
is true.
Dying.
And we need somebody.
Yeah. But they're all dying soon, Michael. Yeah. They're all dying soon over at CBS, so why not? I'm just a bad person today.
We're coming up with a lot of great taglines for the award season next year. Award season 2025. Why not? What else you gonna do?
Old people are dying. You might as well. All right. Let's break for another big story, an exclusive from Clayton Davis at Variety about a potential future Oscars nominee. The last one led the 2019 Oscars in nominations. That was the first Joker from Todd Phillips. We have Joker Folly Ado, reportedly a jukebox musical with covers of 15 well-known songs, Michael. Insiders privy to filming and early versions of Todd Phillips' eagerly awaited Joker sequel tell Variety the movie leans heavily towards being mostly a jukebox musical as it integrates at least 15 reinterpretations of very well-known songs. One is said to be That's Entertainment from the 1953 musical The Bandwagon, famously associated with Judy Garland. However, Clayton Davis, this is me talking now, wouldn't it be The Jam? That's Entertainment? I mean, that's Entertainment, you know, the British rock band. I mean, that movie, that song sounds like it should be in the Joker movie. I mean, it feels like it should have been in the first movie. Michael, do you back me up here?
So not well known then.
It's on my Spotify. It found its way to me.
What Gen Zers are clamoring for a remake of That's Entertainment?
Is Hartford Whalers anthem song on
the Brass
TikTok
Bonanza?
Anymore?
Yeah,
isn't that from the same decade?
And these talk about the budget, how it's like up to $200 million now. Mm. What musical needs a $200 million budget that is going to be timeless because it's covering pop songs?
It's covering pop songs like a Halloween Glee episode though too, like but done on FX Network via American Horror Story casting. You know, I mean, that's this doesn't make sense. Like this guy, Todd
I
Phillips,
fear this movie
has to pull this off in spades. He's got to surprise us. I wouldn't, if you had to bet right now. We've stopped the prop bets, but I will give you odds on prop. I will give you some odds right now.
Okay.
+500, Joker 2, Folly Ado is nominated for Best Picture. Would you take those odds? And that it's not -500, that it's not nominated for Best Picture, Joker, Folly Ado.
I think -500 that it's not is probably proper. Like, I don't know. I probably wouldn't take the yes because there hasn't, I guess at least my expectations can't be lower, but there hasn't been an update or a rumor or a leak or something that has come out about this movie in the last 6 months that hasn't just been a red flag for me. Hmm. I don't understand. Look, if you want to do a musical, Lady Gaga is certainly the lead person you want, right? Mm-hmm. That makes sense. And Joaquin Phoenix is great in everything. So you know the performances are going to be on the level, and they're going to be awesome. But I'm just, why is this a musical? What songs are they covering? What's the shelf life for the musical angle that they're doing here? Is it going to be like contemporary pop songs? It sounds not, if That's Entertainment is one of them. But then again, if you're covering songs that nobody really knows from this generation, I don't know that That's Entertainment, like I said before, that's not going to be something that people are like clamoring to get into the theaters for. But we doubted the first Joker movie from Todd Phillips, right? And it, like you said, it ended up leading the Oscars nominations. So I'm trying to temper my expectations, but I'm very concerned.
I don't think we doubted the first movie. We set a whole series on the Joker character study that it was going to work, didn't we?
Yeah, but then it came out and the media was all about how, you know, dark and twisted it is and how it preaches to the lonely male. And remember when the media was basically begging someone to cause havoc at a theater?
We didn't love remember the that? First movie. We didn't love the first movie, even though on rewatch it's a well-made film. But we were slightly mixed on it, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
Even though, again, you know, we praised it for a lot of things and we gave it a fairly high grade at the end of the day. We did our thing. We hate the best. here at Mike, Mike, and Oscar, if I can throw another catchphrase out there. But look, I mean, we have Phoenix and Gaga joined by Zazie Beetz, Catherine Keener, Brendan Gleeson.
It's a great cast.
I mean, it is a great cast, but I don't... I mean, is Zazie Beetz musical? I have no idea. Is Catherine Keener musical? Is Brendan Gleeson? Have you ever seen them in musicals? I think it's going to be these two wackadoos just singing in broad daylight all of these effed up takes on good to, you know, I don't know, pop songs. I mean, a jukebox.
If you had to go
musical,
over or under, if you had to go over or under the Joker 1's box office, would you go over or under for this?
Under. You probably have to take under. Because yeah. I do think you're pushing away the base, and the base of wackadoos that love the first movie, they're not happy about this project. They're not. They're upset. The bros are upset, bro. And yeah. I'm hoping they pull it off. I really do somehow. And even if they did, it probably doesn't satisfy the bros, bro.
And like I said, I'm trying to keep a level head about it. And I do like when big swings are taken and big chances are taken. So I'm trying not to like lose my mind over this, but man, I don't know. $200 million for That's Entertainment cover.
And we don't even know which version of the song it is.
Like the Seinfeld when Kramer's doing the real Kramer tour and Jerry summarizes it. He's like, yeah, it's $38.50 for a mini Three Musketeers bar.
Oh God. Now I get all your references. Life isn't the same. It used to be full of mystery and
bliss.
Wonderment.
Blissful ignorance.
I don't know. I don't know what to expect of this movie. I'm gonna have to do the dive on this year in preview and see if we got other movies that are going to bounce it off the Best Picture field. But I would probably bet against it getting nominated, I think. But who knows?
Yeah, right now, certainly.
Speaking of potential Oscar players for the future, Cillian Murphy, who is freshly attached to star and produce 28 years later, he has now been attached to star in the adaptation of the novel Blood Runs Cold. Michael, this is a corny-ass title.
No, you and I are just destined to disagree on what is and isn't a quality dad joke, because I read that title for the first time, and my first thought was, that's clever. So,
Michael,
I remember you hated some dad jokes recently, too, from like the Oscars, and I was like, those are great.
Well, I am not with child, so maybe we're both arguing about dad jokes, and we shouldn't, because we're
just off base completely.
We're living a lie. Maybe we should just get better jokes. Blood Runs Cold takes place in the late 1960s in Pennsylvania's coal mines, chronicling a shocking assassination that altered the history of American labor unions. So we're coming off the strikes. This seems to be something that, you know, the industry is interested in. You have the writers of Ford v. Ferrari, Jez, and John Henry Butterworth, and now you have the incumbent best lead actor who's going to star in the film, Cillian Murphy.
Yeah, biopic and assassination and all kinds of intrigue there. And like you said, it has to do with labor unions and labor strife. So it's a good mix of contemporary stuff that might play well on the Oscars level and be like a zeitgeisty movie. So
sight unseen, without knowing anything about the project, do you think he is the assassin, Cillian Murphy, or do you think he is getting assassinated? Or he's the investigator, or, you know, what part is he playing?
First instinct is to say he gets assassinated.
Mm-hmm. He's a big name now. He's top billing.
Have we seen? I'm trying to think. When's the last time? I'm sure somebody's going to yell at the radio, podcast, iPhone, whatever they listen to this on, and knows it right away. But I'm trying to think of, like, who won Best Actor in, like, a star-making performance and their first role after was a bad guy.
That's a great question. I would like to do a study on that.
Yeah.
Post it to our website that doesn't exist yet. Anyway. Why am I just negging ourselves every chance I get this episode? We got to move on to Oscar trailers. Beetlejuice is where we should start. Number one, I love the title. Mm-hmm. I love that the word is, there's a huge increase in practical effects here. I love that we immediately look at the model playset in the basement of the house. I just love that the nostalgia buttons that this trailer is hitting. Mm-hmm. And I don't even remember if the Banana Boat song of Harry Belafonte's, you know, the reprise sung by the choir, was in the first movie. I can't remember the first movie that well. I haven't seen it that many times.
Don't they sing it when they're dancing around the dinner table when Beetlejuice is like controlling everyone, I think?
Thank you. But, I mean, you got Winona Ryder, mother of Wednesday Addams, mm-hmm. Someone's Funeral. The entire family is there. Catherine O'Hara, I do remember her from the first movie. The Juicy Loose. Terrible impersonation. He's really going deep. I think he's inhaling as he speaks.
I think this movie is going to make buku bucks.
I do too. I think it's playing.
I mean, it's March and we're already getting teasers and promotion for it. It's 6 months out.
I think everybody in the movie theaters I was at, and I went to the movies three times last week, they were delighted. Fans were delighted by this trailer.
I mean, it's got a great mix. You got Jenna Ortega, who's one of the hot up-and-coming names. You know, couldn't be a bigger young star attached to this. Michael Keaton got the nostalgia play involved. I think this movie's going to do very well. And you're right, it couldn't be a better title. Beetlejuice is a perfect title for the Beetlejuice movie.
And how about if he just wins Best Actor? How about that?
For Michael Beetlejuice? Keaton. Yeah, why not?
Michael Keaton, just let's that's the potential of this year, Michael.
That's what should, yeah. I mean, if the Oscars want to get back in the good graces, yeah.
We just have a fuck it year. Just fuck it all. Yes. Just say yes, Hollywood. Just say yes, Academy.
Michael Keaton against Ryan Gosling from Fall Guy in Best Actor.
I got to tell you, man, I loved this second trailer from The Fall Guy. I hated the gobbledygook nonsense Super Bowl trailer that made no sense. And here, I mean, look, you could voice a soundtrack. You could take this soundtrack any way you want it, the Journey reprise here, and have Steve Perry belting out that chorus.
Yes.
To me eating a hamburger. And it would make $100 million at the box office.
All right. It's mustard stains.
Did I tell you what my kids did to me?
So what?
I have no kids, but I coach a million kids. And my track team, we went to Nationals in Philadelphia, and we wanted to get cheesesteaks. We were talking about it all spring. This is last year. And I got a cheesesteak, and I was like thrilled. We all waited 45 minutes in line at D'Alessandro's to eat it. So, of course, I wasn't going to mess around. I was going to eat the thing and enjoy life. And I was zoned in. The kids took a video of me eating the whole thing, unbeknownst to me. And they sped it up.
Here we see in its natural habitat.
So it's a time-lapse video of me just eating the whole thing, housing it, and it's gone like viral online with all the whole school and
good. Everybody. This could be your wake-up call for your love affair with food. Not to say you're like a morbidly obese guy or like you're not, but your obsession with food has to have a come to Jesus moment.
I didn't even know how popular this video was. These kids are, what are we talking about? No, but they could take that video and put it to Steve Perry's voice and make millions of dollars.
Probably. Yes. And this is like the premise of this movie. It's such bullshit. But it's the action movies in 2024, I feel like, have become the actual versions of the parodies that like 90s sitcoms and cartoons said they would be. Mm-hmm. Because this premise is Hannah Waddingham going to Ryan Gosling and being like, you got to go find the actor. And he's like, why? And she goes, basically, her explanation is, I don't fucking know. And then the movie goes.
Why not? Why not?
Right? Yeah, exactly.
Look, you have Taylor Swift jokes. You have palpable sexual tension between two.
Oh, it's so annoying how good Emily Blunt and Ryan Gosling are at acting. Oh, my God. Because you watch this trailer and you think those are two people who are falling in love. And they're both happily married to other A-listers.
Right, but you have one catchphrase after another that you just want to see play out. One last stunt going down in a blaze of glory. I mean, the Fall Guy looks like should make $1 billion. I mean, this movie just looks like, I mean, and you end on a joke ogling Ryan Gosling after the year he's had Emily Blunt. It's hilarious.
Yeah. The Ryan Gosling versus Michael Keaton for Best Actor.
Ryan Gosling, Michael Keaton, and Chris Hemsworth of Furiosa.
I don't think so.
A Mad Max saga. He's playing a villain, Mike. He's got to get the prosthetic nose. Can we stop doing that, though?
Well, thank God. Mike, thank God they have the prosthetic nose in this, because otherwise, he's just Thor. He's Chris Hemsworth with a beard and facial hair in a red cape. Why in God's name would they give him a red cape in this movie?
So they last second said, get him a prosthetic nose.
Yeah, throw something on him.
And they just took some Play-Doh and made a fake nose for him. Because the fake nose looks like just nonsense.
Well, that's not the only thing that looks not great from this trailer, right?
Well, here's the thing. I have seen this, not this trailer, but I saw the trailer one in theaters on several occasions. And it looks stupendous. And yet it looks like crap on our crap TVs or computer
that
screens.
That scene where he's holding onto the cliff or the ledge and the bullets go flying over him, that looks horrible. I mean, I'm not trying to that negative and like poop on people's jobs, but man, that looks bad for
looks
a big
like
blockbuster.
The Adventures of Tintin. It looks like, it looks bad.
Yeah,
it looks like an early computer generated film,
like from the early 2000s stuff. I mean, there are positives to take away from this. Hope not. I mean, it's a good score. Two great actors, Anya Taylor-Joy and Chris Hemsworth. Can we get a third option for what post-apocalyptic wasteland is supposed to be? Like, it can't always either be torn down city or sand. Those can't be the only two options for a future world.
But if they're next to a forest or an area that where Furiosa comes from, like the forest people, why don't they just conquer the forest people? Does that make any sense? Anyway, I guess, whatever.
Because that's what Avatar's for, isn't it?
I don't have enough information yet. I'll see what he's getting at when we see the movie. But
I feel like this hasn't been an overly positive episode from us.
Yeah, you know what? You're starting to you're starting to make some sense on that one. And we're not going to get
much
more positive.
It's not
going to
get any more positive
at this juncture. But I think it'll get positive to finish, right? After everybody's turned this off. But I think we're not fans of Bad Boys Ride or Die, the trailer here, even though I think we're both fans of the first three films.
I didn't see Bad Boys for Life. That's it. This trailer was bad. I have no incentive to see this movie right now.
I mean, it was just like one awkward scene after another. Yeah. Is he holding back? Like, because he's Will Smith and he's coming off a controversy and he wants to make sure that these are all like midstream, mainstream jokes or something. Like, you got jokes about Martin Lawrence, being fat at the gas station, just eating. You got, they're trying to redeem the AI Joey Pots and Pans there.
I don't know what the hell that's the
clear his name.
I do think there is something to what you said about this seems a little aimless because who's asking for this movie? I don't know that they know what their target audience is.
The last movie did fantastic before it was like the last movie that did good box office the pandemic
it was, and I think it actually led the American box office, I think, for 2020.
And then my guess is that it played for a while on like PVOD, and made some money because everybody was stuck at home probably ordering it for $20. So I'm sure that they were just like, hey, let's Bad Boys is hot right now, let's let's make another one, ignoring certain current events. and not listening to our podcast, I guess. But like, even that Reba shtick, like, I don't know if it's just a poorly cut trailer or like they stepped on all the punchlines, but that's like a, it's a mildly funny joke at like once in that whole back and forth.
They should have given this to M. Night Shyamalan to cut.
He could cut any trailer, I'm sure.
He cuts a hell of a trailer.
He makes us want to see movies that nobody should see. Nobody should want to see. He does it.
And this
every
just
time.
Looks like a movie that nobody should want to see.
I'm upset because I was looking at this in the spring schedule. I was like, hey, do we do a Bad Boys rewatch? I mean, that's a loaded rewatch that we could do in the off season. No, we're not.
Yeah, it's not. I don't know. Unless the second trailer is way more plot driven, but otherwise it just looks like a generic nothing.
And it's not getting good follow up news coverage because there's an exclusive on Variety that just dropped after we hit record that Will and Jada's charity, their health and wellness charity, is closing. Since the Oscars slap, they've just not been getting any donations.
Can't imagine why.
Yeah. Not good, man.
You're in a Hollywood relationship, I don't know that joint ventures are necessarily the path you want to go down right now anyway in 2024. Just throwing that out there. They don't seem to last very long.
Just don't do any joint ventures ever.
Yeah.
Unless they're...
Just don't get married. Don't get in a relationship.
Unless they're called podcasts and the stakes are low. Well, let's move on to the Dead Don't Hurt.
Joint venture between a man and a cheesesteak.
Now that's what I'm talking about. All right, The Dead Don't Hurt, Michael. The Dead Don't Hurt is Viggo Mortensen's directorial effort here. It stars Viggo, also Vicky Creeps, and Danny Houston. And by the way, Danny Houston is going to be in The Dead Don't Hurt, Horizon and American Saga, two films this year, and The Crow. So big Danny Houston assance.
Houston assance, yeah.
We have this trailer beginning and looking like a fake movie. I like almost deleted this trailer.
Yep,
from this
looked
episode.
Terrible. Looked at the first half of this, I was like, why is every movie that's going for a Western feel this year trying to win Best Picture in 1996?
And yet, I think they threw some story yarns through the middle
Hard
of
left.
This trailer, where you get the immigrant story from Creeps and Viggo, the romance, which was touching, the Civil War enlistment, which grabbed my heart, and then she's attacked. Oh my God!
But then you get the Viggo Mortensen movie, right?
And then
like,
you get the Western.
She gets seemingly raped by the town sheriff, and then it turns into Viggo Mortensen fighting for justice for his lady.
But you get her fighting for justice too there. So
she did she? I didn't see.
It.
She,
yeah,
she was
well,
in an
I think
scene?
I think she's gonna do something. I don't know if it's gonna go well, but you get pull quotes calling this a revisionist Western worth seeing, and that's really all I need. You know, ever since Unforgiven, I've been jumping at every one of these. I don't know why, but I do. Because I mean, the Western. If you're a fan of Westerns, you don't got to be a super fan of Westerns. They don't make them that often. You know. You just need to see him once in a while.
Which is more appealing to you between this one and the Kevin Costner one?
I'd still say the Kevin Costner one, but
really?
I'm not like, I mean, this one seems like it could be really bad, potentially. Like, I don't trust it. The Dead Don't Hurt.
Okay.
I don't trust it, even though I have hope that it's good, and I see everything, so I'll see it. And
funny because I fear more about the Kevin Costner one in that way, that I don't trust it.
I don't trust that one either. I really don't.
Just don't a man like, without trust.
I have lost faith in humanity, but...
well, things got deep.
I think this is a... I just had a big thing happen where I had to do a lot of work for it. And I'm exhausted right now. So we're kind of recording this where I'm fatigued. But
we have a library full of great episodes.
But listen, I have been, well, here's the thing. Here's what, this is your fault. Can I circle back to you and blame
sure,
you?
Sure, sure.
Usually...
Nothing you haven't done before.
Usually, I have to be the positive guy, and you have to be the negative guy, and we're yeah.
Well, I did not have to be. That's kind of our general dispositions.
And this time, I am just, I got to be a human being for once. I'm not playing this silly character you've written for me for once.
Yes. Yes, that's how these things go.
And now we're negative about everything. We're just shitting on everything.
You know, if they're not good, they're not good, man.
No, this trailer, I mean, has major red flags that don't hurt. And yeah, I thought the Kevin Costner Western, what's it called? Horizon? That's got major red flags as well.
I've already blocked it out of my mind.
Yeah. Does it give you any hope that they're going for broke and putting two movies out in the same year? Does that give you any hope? Like, oh, hey, they really committed to this. It's got to be a good story. Because I was thinking about that. I mean, they must have something, right? I mean, there's five books that they're going to do, potentially. They're putting two out in the same year.
I take it as they think it'll make money.
Yeah.
They think there is an audience out there, whether through Yellowstone or through whatever, that they can throw some red meat to and get an easy box office.
Yeah.
But that's cynical, too.
That's cynical. And I'm not disagreeing with it because I'm worn down, beaten up. I saw Ghostbusters Frozen Empire, Michael, and it wasn't that good.
I heard not great things. I've seen nothing but like very meh reviews.
Well, here comes another one.
Yeah, Ghostbusters Frozen Empire did lead the box office, $45 million opening weekend, plus $16.4 million overseas, up to a $61.4 million worldwide box office opening.
So, yeah, that's 1.5 better than Afterlife, but Afterlife came out in, like, the butt of the COVID era, Mike, in November of 2021. So how do you gauge it? There was a lot of little kids in my movie theater, number one. So this seems to be like the family-friendly Ghostbusters. And Deadline and Variety were kind of, it's a Hollywood Reporter that did a piece talking about how super fans of the Ghostbusters franchise, not all that happy with the fact that they've kind of made this a mainstream, you know, for the whole family kind of movie, just kind of going for the four quadrant thing. It did seem to work here. It did seem to work. Frozen Empire has a $100 million budget, and it looks like it's on its path towards profitability. It only opened to 25 markets internationally, so overseas, it's still going to expand to some bigger markets eventually. Well, what do you make of these numbers? Like, it's not a good international number, but they didn't open wide.
Yeah, that's the first take is $16.4 million, but if it's got some more markets to go, I guess that's more understandable. It's going to do over $100 million domestically, you would think. I mean, 45 is usually a pretty hard and fast indicator that you're going north of $100 million in the box office. So I would think that's going to be a success. The profitability, is it going to get to like 250, 300? Maybe. Yeah. I don't know.
It's not a movie like worth hating hard because the first hour is kind of a good hang. And then the last half hour is like underwhelming, but I enjoy Finn Wolfhard doing chores in the attic and there's like a ghost up there. I enjoyed Dan Aykroyd running a pawn shop for paranormal artifacts. I enjoyed, you know, the teenager McKenna Grace playing chess with her ghost pal. I mean, this like Ghostbusters movie is fun to just hang out with. The scenes are not super snappy and fast. They're kind of, you know, they let you breathe. And it's not a bad time at the movies. And it's a crowd pleaser of a movie, of course. We know that coming in. The Frozen Empire doesn't win, guys. But it's, can you imagine?
That would be great.
Have the, then all the kids just crying at the end.
Welcome to life, Junior. The bad guys win.
Ghosts are real and we're doomed. Ghost busting of it all kind of sucked because you're dealing with just CGI. it's cartoons and they're chasing these cartoon ghosts. And then the finale is what we saw in the trailers. Like, so pretty much scene to scene.
If I may, busting did not make you feel all that good.
The busting was the worst feelings of the movie. Like, I like just hanging out with the characters. I mean, it's fun to hang out with
that.
Dan Aykroyd and Bill Murray again. It's fun to hang out with, you know, this sounds family like again. I mean, Paul Rudd, Carrie Coon.
Sounds like an open and shut case of false advertisement to me.
It's
I was told busting would make me feel good.
It's something that I would like to take to a class action lawyer.
going down the top five of the box office, Dune Part Two sits at second place, up to $575.5 million worldwide. For its box office, Kung Fu Panda 4 is in third, $269 million for its worldwide box office. Immaculate came in fourth, $5.4 million, a neon record there for its opening weekend. Another $900K internationally. It's up to $6.3 million in 3 days. It's only got a $9 million budget. Sydney Sweeney and her husband are, I believe, both producers on it as well. This is their show, and that's got to do well in the Neon offices.
Yeah, Neon's got to be ecstatic, and they've done a lot of viral marketing for it. They even used reactions from the right that were upset with the movie as a way to kind of it pushed me over the top into seeing it. I was retweeting some great pull quotes on their posters and stuff. It was pretty funny that they were trolling those folks speaking out against it so hard and literally using reactions from Christians, fundamentalist Christians, that this was sacrilegious. And they're like, yeah, of course it is. Go see it. You want to see it now, people. And look, I mean, Immaculate is just a solid horror film. I think it was overhyped at South by Southwest. I know that's going to shock you, Michael.
Right.
We never expected South by Southwest and the parade leading into the theater could overhype some people. But this I felt like it was a solid movie. It was not a jump scare fest. What are they talking about? This movie breathes. It goes slow. It's not like a fast-paced film. You're just kind of hanging out with, like, Sydney Sweeney Nun in Italy for a while.
Huh.
Which is like, I mean, there's a it actually lulls a little bit because it's creepy and it's building and you know something's up. And they're like very methodically bringing you where you know it's going to be a big finale. And it does deliver a big finale, but it's not like this all-timer crazy finale. It's just kind of what you've seen in these movies before. I just thought it was solid. I thought it was like a mid-B, B84, 85. I walked away pretty satisfied with Immaculate. I thought Sydney Sweeney was excellent. And I don't think she went, like, over the top, with the exception of one scene where she was kind of hamming it up on purpose because she was, like, acting in the scene, her character was.
Right.
So, like, I thought she did a nice job. I thought the VFX was on point. I thought the filmmaking was good. The pacing got a little slow. But I was...
Interesting.
I was patient. It was a Sunday morning, which I'm going to hell, by the way, for seeing this on a Sunday morning. But it was a Sunday morning, 10 a.m. on my A-list, and I was just like, I don't know, it's an 86-minute movie. It went by relatively quick.
I mean, it's relatively positive review there, so nothing much to sneeze at.
It's the best I can do right now for you.
It's also worth noting, I mean, Sydney Sweeney, obviously another huge young name in Hollywood, and Euphoria Season 3, my God, could they have lucked into better casting? Great job casting by them, but they did too good of a job because they need to delay producing Euphoria Season 3 because they want all their stars to keep going off and being stars right now between Zendaya, Sydney Sweeney, Jacob Elordi, everybody else attached there.
Huh. So, I was wondering why that was happening. I'm glad you read that article.
Yeah.
All right.
Arthur the King was in fifth in the box office this week. You haven't seen this yet?
No, I'm probably not going to. I can't do the dog movie. Can you do the dog movies? Can you do any of them?
I can barely do any movies. What are you talking about? No.
I don't want to watch a movie with a dog in jeopardy the whole time.
But you know that dog's going to live, right? They wouldn't name it after the dog.
No, I don't. Because how many PG movies about dogs, the dog dies in the end and you want to rage against humanity.
Good point. Fair.
Mm-hmm.
Why did Mark Wahlberg do that movie?
based on this SNL skit of, hey, dog.
Late Night with the Devil came in six. It did 2.8 million. That is a weekend high, opening weekend high for IFC Shudder. It also, ironically, did a 666 number, 666,000. Actually, the number I saw was $666,666 on its Sunday debut.
Oh, my God. Can you believe this? Yeah, like that's crazy. The world is spiraling towards Armageddon.
Love it.
Late Night with the Devil is mostly just a mockumentary about a late night show with David Dasmalchian as its host. And we've been waiting to see him, you know, kind of expand his repertoire. He's been so many great horror movies, but he's been in like the Suicide Squad as a really odd, peculiar character that we loved with the polka dot man.
Yeah.
This movie was fun to watch. This movie flew by. It was always engaging. Like, I don't think the horror of it all worked all that well until the very end. I loved the third act. But it was, again, it was a creep out fest, and it slowly built. And then, yeah, they had like one possessed guest that kind of, you know, turned the movie on its head, which I enjoyed the hell out of. I think this is an innovative way to do the possession story, because the genre has been so played out with how many Exorcists we've talked about. This when Exorcist Believer was coming out, how tired is that genre? Go back and listen to those episodes. So Late Night with the Devil is exactly what my doctor ordered, man. I needed something like this. B plus 88. I think Dasmalchian is fantastic. I thought the cast did a fun job. Good job here. The editing is fun. I'm in, man. I think people have overhyped it a little bit. Like 100% on Rotten Tomatoes is maybe too high. Some people, you could take some shots at this movie. It's not perfect, but I think, I don't know. I wasn't expecting a great film, but right. I got a really strong horror movie. It's going to come on Shudder like the middle of April.
I will absolutely be seeing both that and Immaculate. I'll probably wait till they get to my house, but yeah, I'll be seeing them.
You know what? I enjoyed the in-theater experience, and I did have a big crowd, which was cool. I saw it on opening night, Late Night with the Devil, and I had a lot of people in there, and people were happy. And they were out loud with it. So it might not be the worst movie to see in theaters. And Immaculate, I'm guessing, probably plays pretty well with a big crowd. But Immaculate is not what it's touted to be. Like, this movie, I got more of what I expected.
Right.
I expected, like, The Nun, you know, The Nun 2 out of Immaculate with a Titan ending. And no.
Was it? And you said it was paced slowly.
It's a slowly paced film, yeah. It's just like she's a nun in Italy. There's a language barrier.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
Well, from something paced slowly to something paced ridiculously.
Roadhouse is a ridiculous movie, isn't it?
I'm less than halfway through it. I started it last night. Yes.
The fight scenes are pretty darn cool.
I love the choreography. The fight scenes are not only they not only look great, but they're shot great too.
Love the fight sequences. Loved all the action in this movie. And good God, man, Conor McGregor is a performance to cherish. It's a performance to tell
the role he was born to play
about. I hope he does nothing else. I hope this is the one Conor McGregor acting performance, and this is all we get. I mean, he is just chef's kiss. He's the greatest. This would be the greatest one-off movie star role ever.
We go from Keaton versus Gosling in lead actor to McGregor in supporting actor.
No, he has secured the supporting actor Razzie right now, but it's not his fault. It's not his fault. They're going to give it to him because he's the most famous name in that group, and the Razzies they're talking about going to hell. But I think Conor McGregor is exactly what this movie needs. So you're probably at the point now where you're 40 minutes in, and you're like,
yeah.
I know where this movie's going. Yeah. But then Conor McGregor shows up, and oh my God, what a ridiculous man. What a ridiculous, ridiculous man. It's great.
I'm all for Smarmy Gyllenhaal, too. I like that.
He's good. I don't love the 45-year-old guy who just knows more than everyone about everything, and yet he doesn't have a pot to piss in.
Yeah, it is a trope, an overdone trope. I agree.
If you're so smart, bro.
Right.
You know, you'd have any job. You could do anything with your life.
Right.
Yeah, give me funny. A break.
All right, we'll finish up with your take on Shirley on all Netflix. Right.
Yeah, this movie could have been really good. Unfortunately, it's like a hatchet job. You could tell that the reshoots and that it was over edited and they're trying to find the story. And look, I read the book by Hunter S. Thompson, Fear and Loathing on the Campaign Trail, 1972. And I was into that. And so I kind of know these politics and that, you know, infamous 1972 Democratic National Convention where right. she wound up with a lot of delegates for a hot minute there. And Shirley Chisholm, you know, is there's a much more important story, I think, of her life than this very bland going nowhere campaign that eventually got its 15 minutes. I just don't love the framing of Shirley, I think, even though they probably read the same books we did and they're into it. I just like you could see that they're trying to figure out this unconventional structure and they just had like they just didn't have a good plot. They didn't tie it all together. So it's like a C minus. Regina King's very good in it. She talks about eating McDonald's a lot. She's you know, we see a lot of food in the movie, so that's a plus. I was hungry when I watched it. I don't know, man. It's just surely it was kind of buried by Netflix's standards. They had what they thought was going to be an awards player,
yeah,
from John Ridley here, and they're putting it out in March, you know, yeah. with a lead actor, a former Oscar winning actress. This was her follow up, right? I mean, after One Night in Miami, directorial debut there.
So middling, and Don't Call Me Shirley.
I think Shirley Chisholm deserved a little better of a movie, unfortunately.
In some ways, the most proper way for this episode to end.
Yeah, just blah, blah, blah. I think we're trying to get some content out, and it backfired, I think. Because we went away from the formula. We have a formula.
No,
I'm
what happened?
Happy. You're sad. We have
what happened was we just I mean we rushed. We had to rush this one out because we were supposed to record tomorrow and schedules got in the way and so we got it. We just had to do it today. And that's what we got. That's what we did.
Had to do it today.
There you go. So blah, blah. Get some content out. There you go. As always, dear listener, what matters most to us are your thoughts. Did you see any of these movies that also Mike just reviewed? Do you have any thoughts on any of the changes that happened in the awards landscape that we talked about at the top of this episode or anything else that you want to leave us comments, questions, or concerns on? As always, you can do so on our social media as we are Mike and Oscar on Facebook and Instagram at MM and Oscar on Twitter, Mike and Oscar at gmail.com, and on Reddit. We are available wherever you do hear podcasts. And if you're listening, oh boy, to us. If you're listening to us on either the Apple Podcast or Spotify app, if you appreciate what we do here, if you wouldn't mind leaving us a 5-star review, maybe not for this episode, but like I said, we have a whole library full of stuff with effort and skill and research. We appreciate if you did so, and thank you to everyone who has done so thus far. Michael, tell the good people what's coming next. Let's have some words of wisdom to end on.
Well, it's wise to get some sleep at some point and record after you've done so, I guess. No, I think, you can't hit them all out of the park. I mean, how many bangers have we done in a row? Literally, this season, like banger after banger.
Yeah.
And you're gonna swing and miss. You're gonna.
At some point, you hit a bloop single instead of a home run.
I don't know. I think this might have been a can of corn. To keep the baseball.
Just speaking so negatively on the outro. Like, you get to this point in the episode, and we're like, you know what? Don't listen to this one.
I watched Pride of the Yankees for like 20 minutes on Sunday. Because my dad had it on, and it was like in between the basketball games, and it was really good, except Lou Gehrig kept swinging around himself, just like literally doing a pirouette. That's what we just did today. I mean, it's entertaining in its bullshit,
right?
I think it's total bullshit, but I hope it was slightly amusing. Because nobody should do that. Nobody should swing a bat that way. So, yeah, we got our year in preview series that I'll somehow figure out. We may have some special guests, we hope, along with that, the next month or so. That we're going to kind of like, we'll do the same thing where we'll kind of go back and forth between, coverage of the movie year and the year in preview Oscar series. So that'll be fun.
I think it's important that we end this episode now, guys. When reality sucks, you can can some corn with us. We are Mike and Oscar, trying to make award season year round without the stuffiness. I can't even do the outro right without the stuffiness.
High. It is far. It is caught.
We will see you all very soon.
Easily caught.